Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk Podcast. We've got a very special treat for you today. I'm Mark Schanowski, joined by Kevin Anderson, my longtime producer on the Bulls pre- and post-game coverage. And joining us is Casey Johnson, the renowned beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. Casey, thanks for making time for us. I know you were in Vegas for part of the Summer League. What were your takeaways from that experience?
Probably similar to a lot of people. I mean, Wendell Carter Jr. obviously stood out, first team all Summer League, and you know, obviously using the It's Only Summer League qualifier, he looked very, very good. I think what has to be most encouraging for Bulls fans and people within the organization is I think a lot of areas he looked good in are areas that can translate to the big boy league. You know, it's been pretty well documented, not only how strong his rim protection was, but how solid his footwork was when he was switched on to smaller players in space, and just showed some really, really solid defensive instincts. And then offensively, I think he showed probably a little bit more polish than you were expecting. So he clearly, to me, was the big takeaway from my 48 hours out there.
And ironically, you know, the Bulls were hoping that Mo Bamba would slide to them at 7, but certainly initially Wendell Carter Jr. should have the easier transition to the NBA because of his skill set. Bamba might take some time to develop. Of course, Marvin Bagley got hurt and didn't really look good in one of the games he played in. You think the Bulls may have got a find at 7, much like they did with Lauri Markkanen a year ago?
I do, and you know what's funny, as you guys know, I mean, there's so much misinformation being spewed out leading up to the draft, and I mean, I was one of the ones leading the charge that they were interested in Bamba. But when you once you get through the draft and you do some back reporting, you can talk to a lot of people that that say that they had Wendell Carter Jr. ranked higher on their draft board as far as big men, and I don't think it was revisionist history. There are a lot of people in the organization that were very, very high on him. They think, like Wendell says, they think he can take a step at the next level. I mean, Wendell, the first thing that jumps out about him, well, way back when he talked to him at the draft combine, was just how confident he is that at the next level his game can flourish and progress. And the Bulls believe that as well. So I know they're very, very pleased that they got him. They see him as a cornerstone piece alongside Markkanen for the next 8-10 years or so.
Casey, we know that Michael Porter Jr.'s team really would have liked him to stay in Chicago after the draft.
His agency, not Missouri.
Yeah, his agency. When I say team, we're not talking about Missouri there, absolutely. Do you think how much serious interest do you think the Bulls had in that? Because we know the Bulls medical staff was the first one to look at him, and that they had the access, and then they distributed that to the rest of the league. Was there serious interest there, or do you think there was just a situation in which his medicals looked that bad and they didn't want to take a risk, even if it meant trading down or trading up from 22 to try and get him in the teens?
Yeah, I mean, I just never really heard much linkage from the Bulls towards Porter. I mean, I barely wrote his name leading up to the draft. I was not hearing much connectivity between those two parties. I think you're right, Kevin, that there was some interest going the other direction. But I, beyond the medicals, I think there were some question marks about, you know, fit. Not really so much in talent, but just in terms of teammate-wise. I think he's a very a guy that's probably going to be another kind of high maintenance guy and need the ball a lot. And that's another thing that attracted them to Wendell Carter Jr. You don't often hear a guy sitting there talking about the excitement of setting screens and doing things without the ball. And he just seems like a low maintenance pro that they can plug right in. And I know for a fact that beyond the medical stuff, they were really interested in talking to Porter, and they like him a lot personally. They did end up getting an interview with him. They like him a lot personally, but I just never heard much connection between those two guys. And as far as the medical, I mean, this has been reported pretty thoroughly. You guys know this, that that really was just a matter of convenience with the agency being based here and the Bulls' longstanding trustful relationship with that agency. So that was more of a convenience thing than anything else.
Right, and that makes total sense. When it comes to Wendell Carter, how do you see him fitting in? And we know it's training camp still weeks away, and certainly, as we know, training camp injuries can certainly affect who the starters are opening night. How do you see Carter fitting in? Do you think we will see him starting?
We don't expect any punches in the face.
No, we don't expect. Well, you know what?
Taj Gibson got Derek by an accident, too.
But, I mean, the situation is eerily similar to last year in terms of Bobby Portis. I'm not saying he's going to throw a punch again, but Portis goes into the season last year thinking that's his spot, right?
Right.
And then the thing with Nico happens and it's ugly. But again, a little bit similar.
And Bobby's playing for a contract, too.
Yes, he is. So my question, I'm not going to ask you, is somebody going to get punched in training camp? Because we don't want that, Casey.
No.
My question is, do you think we will see Carter start opening night? And how does the dynamic come into play with Lopez and what Lopez had to endure the last 2 months of the season last year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just guessing, but if you're asking me to guess the opening night starting center, I'm going with Robin Lopez. I think that there's a big reason why you kept him around. He can be obviously a great veteran mentor. I do think by the end of the year, you'll probably see Carter starting, particularly if Lopez is traded near the February trade deadline. But I just think, you know, as poised as he is and as much sense as it makes to kind of let the young guys just get out there and run around. I mean, he is 19 and he's got a lot to learn about the league. Now Fred Hoiberg has said it's going to be an open competition in training camp. So maybe Carter can surprise us some more and beat out Lopez, but I personally just don't see it. I do know that he'll play. He'll be in the rotation and you got to see what you have him. And one thing you keep hearing John Paxson say, obviously, is when you have a young team, you have to define roles for them and let them play through mistakes. They need consistent playing time to grow. So I would expect you to have a prominent role in the rotation, but I think opening night, him starting is, just from my guesstimation, is a little bit of a stretch.
Well, speaking of the rotation, all of a sudden we got a log jam at the wing spots with the signing of Jabari Parker.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Bulls did not draft one priority sports guy in Michael Porter Jr. They got another one, though, in Chandler Hutchison. And it was interesting that Gar and Pax kind of went the old Jerry Krause sleuth route. They hid him away from all prospective interested parties. I mean, he was nowhere. He wasn't at the combine. He didn't do individual workouts. I thought his play was kind of uneven during summer league. I think you saw some of the qualities that they were attracted to in Hutchison in terms of his ability to take the ball off the defensive glass and go end-to-end and make plays in transition. He didn't look real confident shooting the NBA three ball. And I thought offensively, you know, he was kind of picking his spots. What were your initial impressions of Hutchison, and can he earn playing time as a rookie? Because right now there's a lot of guys at that three spot.
Yeah, initial impressions, I mean, I was kind of going in with a blank slate because I don't watch a lot of Boise State basketball.
No, me neither.
So, you know, I didn't really have many expectations. Obviously, I had heard the scouting report on him and heard what the Bulls liked about him, but I would agree with you, Mark. There was a mixed bag in summer league. I do think that the thing that jumped out is what you noted. He's very, very comfortable just grabbing the ball off the glass and leading the break. And, you know, that the Bulls keep talking about, you know, the league trending towards having multiple ball handlers. And he certainly looks very, very comfortable in that role and obviously has length and athleticism at the offensive end. I actually, you know, he shot a decent percentage from three, but I agree that he looked a little hesitant at times, and they really need to work on that release. I think that release is very slow, kind of has almost a hitch to it. So that's something that can get worked out, especially with our the big shot Dr. Fred Hoiberg.
That's like a Beloit College release, right?
Yeah, I don't know. You might not be able to get that off in Division III. So, but you know, beyond the three, I thought actually he looked even worse finishing and getting to the rim. Now, I think he had the ability to get to the rim. He looked kind of lost sometimes when he'd drive in there. And that's to be expected. He's got to learn the next level and stuff. But as far as rotation minutes, I think he'll be, kind of the ninth or tenth man to start off. And it really comes down to how they're going to use Holiday because Jabari's going to be starting.
Is Holiday going to be on the team, KC?
I think he'll be on the 18-19 team, maybe not the whole season, but I think he'll start it.
Yeah.
It's just not a huge market for him. I mean, the Bulls paid him what they paid him to be the transition guy in the early stages of this rebuild. And I think that right now he's the backup three over Chandler. I could be wrong, but Chandler's got to learn a lot in the league. And he doesn't, to me, he's a four-year guy versus a one-year guy. He doesn't look to me as ready as Jabari Parker. I'm sorry, as Wendell Carter Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So, KC, the three spot is, as we know, barring an injury somewhere in camp, we're going to see Jabari Parker get the majority of his playing time at that wing position at the three. My concern, I know a lot of people have made the play about his defense, and yes, I think the Bulls team defense is going to be a major issue. But my number one concern with Parker is his addition seems to take away from the shots and what Lauri Markkanen is going to get. Do you have a concern from a basketball standpoint about Parker's fit? And how do you see that with LaVine getting the big contract and certainly probably going to be the primary scorer on this team? How do you see Parker and his impact on Markkanen?
I mean, it's weird because, obviously I've heard this concern from a lot of places. And when I hear, I'm kind of this is why I like indie rock and punk rock, because, I usually go the other way. So everyone's saying it's not going to work. And it might not work, but now I'm kind of going the other way because I'm hearing it too much. I'm kind of getting annoyed by it. I mean, they're talented offensive players. Let's see them try to figure it out. I do think you've got some ball-stopping tendencies in LaVine at times, and you've got some ball-stopping tendencies in Parker at times, and they're both gifted scorers. So yes, they need to improve in those areas, but, I mean, they're also basketball players who want to win, so I'm going to kind of reserve judgment until I see how it plays out. I do agree that Markkanen needs a lot of touches, and I think he needs a lot of shots. I think Markkanen should be getting 15 shots a game. That's how talented I think he is and can be and will be. It's definitely going to be a work in progress. It falls on Hoiberg and his staff to design a system where there's good ball movement and stuff. But I've just heard so much doom and gloom about it and, negativity about Parker's arrival and now, LaVine's big contract. I don't know. I'm kind of now starting to go, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and see how it plays out. There's clearly a lot of offensive talent there. They do need to figure it out, but I'm certainly going to be excited to see it play out because I agree. I think the defense is going to be pretty bad, and I think offensively they could be a lot of fun, and they're going to need to win shootouts to win games.
Our good friend Vincent Goodwill talked to Zach LaVine last week and asked him about the dynamic of, do you have to have someone on the team who is, quote, the man? And LaVine said that he's worked so hard that he naturally wants to be that guy, the one who's the primary alpha on the team. Do you think that dynamic is just a media overblown thing about there's got to be a, quote, face of the franchise? Or do you think as players that they look at, okay, somebody has to be the guy?
Well, it's a good question, Kevin, but I would just say this, and I'm not saying the Bulls are this, but the Warriors have quite a bit of offensive firepower on their roster, and they seem to figure it out and play pretty selflessly, within the context of the team structure. So the Bulls have, eons and miles to go. But I mean, yes, I guess what I'm saying is I do think it's a little bit of a media story. I mean, yes, players have ego, and yes, it's important to them. Little things like who's introduced last and who gets the last shot. And yes, there'll be a time this season, I guarantee you, not only Vincent Goodwill, but myself and Joe Cowley and everybody around the beat will be writing about a time where somebody's upset about their role in the offense. It's going to happen. That's just the nature of team sports over an 82-game season. But ultimately, you need more than one alpha scorer, and you need more than one talented player. And like I said, the best teams are the ones that have a lot of talent and figure it out. And, you know, Steph Curry, you know, to me was it's emblematic of, you know, him stepping aside and letting Kevin Durant take over at times, and then vice versa. So why can't the Bulls do that on a lesser level?
Casey, you know, as a longtime media guy, that sometimes we love to get these pet phrases that coaches and executives throw out there and run with them. Gar Forman got a lot of heat for the young and athletic.
Yeah, younger and athletic.
Younger and athletic. And
point guard of the future.
And then Pax, on the night of the Jimmy Butler trade, said we're going to be patient and disciplined in the rebuild. And I think he might have said that phrase about 30 to 50 times over the last 13 months. And then all of a sudden, they had $20 million burning a hole in their pockets, and they went out and signed Jabari. We already talked about the fit a little bit, but in your mind, did this represent a total 180 on Pax's part? I know it's a low risk because it's only a one-year commitment, but it just seemed like it kind of flew in the face of everything he had been talking about the previous 13 months.
Yes, I kind of see where you're going, but I think you've already answered your own question. To me, it's because it is a so low risk and they can get out of it after 1 year that it does still kind of square with that patience and discipline, because it's just a one-year flyer. And, you know, that's why, you know, everyone has nitpicked the Wade Rondo stuff to death. But, I mean, as clunky as that was at times, it was also short-term money, obviously. So they were able to get out of that after 1 year. It cost them a lot of money, but they were able to get out of that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the Bulls' MO, is to, when they take swings, it's to do it with low years. So, ultimately, I think Jabari ended up making a lot of sense, because he just kind of it's a situation that kind of fell towards them, and they saw the opportunity, and it fit with their timeline because it's such a low-risk, short-term contract.
So, you call yourself a Bulls fan? NBC Sports Chicago wants to hear from you. Visit NBCSportsChicago.com/BullsAF and tell us what makes you the biggest Bulls fan. You could win the chance to be recognized as our Bulls authentic fan of the game, including tickets to a game, a behind-the-scenes tour, be shown on TV, and much more. NBCSportsChicago.com/BullsAF.
You're listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast. Mark Schanowski, Kevin Anderson, and the Chicago Tribune Bulls beat writer Casey Johnson with you today. Before we get down to some league issues, quick thought on your expectations for this team. I know it's very difficult to project with a team that could potentially at some point start five guys that are 24 years or younger. I did a power rankings at our website, NBCSportsChicago.com. I had the Bulls as like the 10th best team in the East, maybe 22nd overall. I'd have to look at the list right in front of me. But I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they maybe win 10 more games this year. Where do you weigh in on that?
Oh, I hate it when we agree this much. But we've got a mailbag posting at ChicagoTribune.com this week, and I was asked a reader asked me 41 wins over or under, and I said under, and I'm terrible at predictions, but I'm in the 35 to 37 range, so that would be 10 more wins, obviously, yeah, than last year. And I agree, I think they're probably going to be in the mix for that 8 seed, but ultimately fall a little bit short. We all know how hard it is for young teams to win consistently in this league, and, you know, for everyone who says, well, they won 27 games last year and they weren't even really prioritizing winning, they also had a month where they were lights out, obviously, in December. So I think to replicate that is going to be difficult. So I do think they'll be better, but I don't think they'll be better enough to make the playoffs.
Casey, how much pressure is on Fred Hoiberg to make this work, and specifically to make it work early and not start the season like they did last year?
Yeah, I mean, you can't start 3-20 in year 4 or 5 of a deal, and I don't envision them doing so. I think they've got a lot of talent, and I think they're going to win a lot of shootouts. I really do. The East, as we all know, is not that scary. So, you know, they're going to have nights where they just get stupid hot offensively, and that's how much, to me, offensive firepower they have on paper. And I don't envision that. But to answer your question, Kevin, I mean, look, I mean, it's a cliche answer, but there's always pressure on NBA head coaches. Yes, this is an important year because it's year four or five of the deal, and obviously next summer is when you're going to be looking at extension or not. So, you know, it's interesting because it's been well documented. We've all talked about it. We've all written about how Fred's not really had a lot of continuity, and he finally gets an opportunity to have some continuity, and then Jabari Parker gets thrown in the mix at the last minute, and it's going to be a little bit of a challenge for him. But, you know, it's also an offensive weapon, and that's what he was hired for. So here you go. You got a lot of toys to play with. It's on Fred and his staff to get them working in cohesion and the players to obviously execute the game plan. You know, I do think that this team offensively really fits Fred and how he wants to play. So I expect Fred to have a good year. I thought he had a pretty good year last year, and I think he can grow another step this fourth season of his deal.
Two more things on the Bulls. We haven't even mentioned Chris Dunn. Obviously, the Bulls are counting on him taking a big step forward this year. He'll be eligible for an extension next summer. And then Denzel Valentine told reporters at the end of the season he wanted to be a starter. I don't even know if he's in the rotation now. You think we're gonna see a very unhappy Denzel Valentine at the end of training camp?
You know, I think he's in the rotation just because, you know, somebody's got to play backup too. And, you know, he shot 40% as a starter last year from three. Now he's definitely not going to be starting this year, but I think overall he was at 37 or 38%. So I think he's still got a decent role as a scoring reserve in that Portis unit. But yeah, he wants to do more. And I've always said, to me, Denzel's game has like a cumulative power to it. It's kind of subtle, but the longer he's out there, the more he gets into the playmaking role. And he sees angles and sees the court very well. So I think if he's in a limited reserve scoring role, that aspect to his game will be lost. And obviously defensively, he's not bringing a lot. So he's going to have to really shoot well from three to have much of an impact. But, you know, they keep talking about having these multiple ball handlers, and he can certainly play that role, too, in that second unit. So I see him in the rotation, but as far as whether or not he's unhappy, he's definitely not going to be starting. So, you know, he'll have to answer that.
And Chris Dunn?
Dunn, in terms of what, just his role? Or
yeah,
what?
Just where do you see his game evolving? I mean, he showed some ability as a late-game guy who wanted the ball in his hands in close games, and he made some big shots for them. Of course, after he took the face plant in the Golden State game, that kind of effectively derailed his season. But he shot the ball better than I think a lot of us expected, especially from distance. Do you think we'll see another step forward next year, or do you think they're really going to try to force him into that old-school facilitating point guard role?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about him is he's so good at, to me, getting into the lane. Now, he's not great at finishing, and he needs to finish better, but I think you do need to have him more in a playmaking role just because now you've got, you know, Markkanen, Levine, and Parker who need to eat offensively. And I agree with you, Mark. I mean, obviously, in that December stretch, he was taking and making some big shots late in games. So, you know, I certainly think that'll be an option at times, but to me, that can't be his primary role. He's got to be, you know, his assist average has to go up. And he's got to be a beast defensively because there's not much beyond him, especially in that starting five. So I know that he's got designs to be a full, complete offensive player. But to me, playmaking and defense need to be his biggest roles for this coming season.
Casey, you've covered this team for a long time now, and you've covered some really, really interesting players like Joakim Noah and certainly Derrick Rose's story and back in years before that. Of all the players you've covered, who's been your favorite to cover? Who's been your favorite to interview?
It's hard to pick this one. I will say that I always had a very strong connection and understanding with Joakim Noah. And the way I always describe him is you've got a combination of worldliness, intelligence, intensity, and a sense of humor. And that's obviously a beat writer's dream. I mean, that guy, he would invariably just completely make me laugh just with, and he just saw the world in just such a interesting fashion that I really, really enjoyed spending time around him. I still get to see him every once in a while, obviously, around the league. And he's got just such a spirit about him. So he would be up near the top of the list.
I thought for sure you're going to go with somebody from the Tim Floyd Bulls, like Dalibor Bagaric or Khaled El Amin, you know?
I mean, there's a lot of them. I mean, I covered Jamal Crawford.
Jamal was great.
I still talk to Jamal regularly. I mean, he's obviously a great guy. And then, I mean, any beat writer will tell you that any season around Charles Oakley is a treat. I mean, that guy just fed your notebook constantly. He had some of the most hilarious quotes of all time and some of the most hilarious metaphors. And then I refuse to call Ron Artest Meta World Peace because it will always be Ron Artest to me. was obviously a treat to cover early in his career, too. I just caught up with both Oakley and Artest at the Big Three when it stopped in Chicago. So a lot of great personalities over the years. And I always say, you know, and Mark knows this because he's been around, you know, sports in the city forever, is to me the best part about our job is the relationships you build and over time. And I'm not saying we're like, you know, close personal friends with these guys, but you do get to know them in a different fashion, a lot of people. And that's the stuff that always keeps you going, because the relationships are always changing, because the players and coaches are always changing. And so when I speak at, you know, young journalism classes and high schools and things like that, that's what I always say. Like, people say, like, you've been covering a team for a long time, does it ever get boring? I said, no, because you're always building new relationships. The faces are always changing. So I've been lucky to be around a lot of fun people.
Yeah, and Steve Kerr, one of the all-time greats, both as a player and as a coach. I mean, he had that great sense of humor, very quick wit, and he was always fun to talk to in any context. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate he's had to deal with all these health issues. He really hasn't been able to fully enjoy what this dynasty has accomplished in Golden State and has a lot of years to run.
Yeah, no doubt. I used to joke with Steve because that was the second three-peat was when I was first starting to be around the team, and I was like, you know, the seventh sidebar guy for the Chicago Tribune. I wasn't the main beat writer, and I used to joke because I'd always, you know, go to Steve because, you know, he was such a great quote, and he wasn't, you know, one of the main storylines. So I used to joke with Steve that he should get half my paycheck, or at least get a double byline. It should be by Casey Johnson and Steve Kerr, because I quoted him so much.
But Steve's done pretty well for himself.
He has.
No question about it. One of the highest paid coaches around. Casey, you've been way too generous with your time. Before we let you go, I got to ask you, I'm not going to ask you about all the things that happened, because it's been a typically crazy NBA summer, but the thing that struck me the most, and probably is going to be the biggest story going into the year, LeBron James said after his team was eliminated that he wanted to play with guys with high basketball IQs, and then Magic Johnson surrounds him with some of the biggest space cadets in the history of the NBA. Lance Stephenson, Michael Beasley, JaVale McGee. I mean, is LeBron going to pull what's left of his hair out trying in his year one with the Lakers? Or is he happy knowing that he's got his kids settled in L.A., he's playing the long game both professionally in terms of his business interests and his basketball interests?
All I know is we're going to have to be all pounding caffeine to be catching those West Coast tips, because that's going to be appointment TV out there with the La La Land, man. I mean, it was already going to be amazing seeing LeBron in a Lakers uniform, but you're right. He's certainly got quite the cast of characters around him. Now, actually, I talked to somebody who said that he enjoyed playing with Beasley, so we'll see.
He's the only one.
Yeah, so we'll see how that one works out. But, yeah, there's some curious signs. That team's going to be so fascinating to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Are they a playoff team? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think with LeBron, they get 50 wins, even with that weird support. Well, they got some good young talent. Remember, last couple of months, the Lakers played some really good basketball under Luke Walton. I like Ingram. I like Kuzma. Josh Hart played really well in the summer league. They've got some pieces there. You put the best player in the league on that team, I think they win 50 games. I think they're 5 or 6 seed in the West.
To me, the roster's a weird fit, you know, because the book to build a true high-quality championship team around LeBron is to surround him with shooters.
Right.
And there's a lot of non-shooters on that team that are going to be playing with them at the same time.
Well, Magic claimed that's a strategy all along. Actually, what the strategy is making sure all those one-year contracts add up to whatever they can pay Kawhi Leonard next summer.
Yes.
You think Kawhi ends up there, Casey?
I do. I mean, obviously, you know, Toronto is doing the Oklahoma City Paul George model, and you know, you can never rule it out because, look, they can still pay him more than anybody. And, you know, he's it's a good culture up there. And, you know, you get him there a year and maybe he falls in love with it. But I at the end of the day, you know, I think there's just too many breadcrumbs leading him to join forces with LeBron in L.A.
There's no question that they're playing the long game with that team and with LeBron, right? It's not not in win now mode this upcoming season.
The fact that he gave them, you know, a three-year commitment at least leads you to believe that they will be able to attract players either in free agency or through the trade market.
Right. I see the Lakers as being similar situation as the Bulls in terms of a fringe playoff team. You know, I don't see them winning 50 games. I see them in that conference because it's a very, very difficult conference. I see them winning probably 42 to 44 games, somewhere in that range. And I'm not sure that gets them in the playoffs in the West.
The one thing I will say is, like, as we all know, what LeBron is so great at doing is he's like Michael in this sense, and his greatness is so heightened that he almost demands people to raise up their game, and he holds people accountable. So I do think that you know, he'll get the most out of a lot of that young talent. So it is a brutal conference. I kind of probably am in between you guys. I don't think they're going to win 50, but I think they're going to be, you know, high 40s, and I do see them as a playoff team, but probably a lower seeded playoff team.
So now that you're done coaching your kids' little league teams, what are you going to do with the rest of your summer?
We have a couple basketball camps to get to. Our youngest is going to go up to Porter Moser's camp and check
nice.
Out what that's all about. And then going to get away for a couple weeks to Michigan. So, it's been a busy summer on the diamonds and in the newspaper with the Bulls. The NBA never fails to produce amazing storylines, I will say that.
Yeah, we're almost at the end of July, and it seems like there's a new headline every day. So it's been a lot of fun covering it. Of course, KC's been on the beat for a long time. You can follow his work in the Chicago Tribune. And KC, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate all the time you gave us. And Media Day will be right around the corner. Look forward to seeing you again on the beat.
Yeah, always great talking hoops with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
That is KC Johnson. Remember, you can find all of our Bulls Talk podcasts at nbcsportschicago.com/podcasts. You can also listen and subscribe at Apple, Stitcher, and Google Play. Until next time, so long, everybody.